A lot of y'all know me. My name is Wendell Rogers. I go to church with Mike and them. And this morning they gave me the subject of hardship to talk about Joseph. You know, when they told me that Joseph was the one I was talking about, I was kind of excited because as a child, that was one of my favorite stories from the Bible. And I've more or less just assumed that most everybody knows the story of Joseph pretty well. I'm not going to read much of it. It covers like 7-8 chapters in Genesis. It's a long story. It's a very good story. If you haven't read it, I urge you, if you haven't read it all the way through, I urge you to do so because it's a very, very good story. As I said, I was introduced to it as a child from children's stories. Andy and I, our grandmother had an old blue hardback book that was falling apart full of children's stories, and that was one of my favorite ones from that. And one thing that struck me, when we hear these stories as a child or as young, when we sitting in church listening to the preacher talk about these people that we're talking about here, we get the impression that they were, these were the quintessential godly people. They were humble and kind and all those things that Paul talked about charity in 1 Corinthians 13. This is what we think of these people. But they weren't these super people. They were human. They were all human just like us. And their stories mean a lot to us because of that. Mike and Ron mentioned a number of reasons why we study the Old Testament, why we look at the Old Testament. When I was younger and ignorant, I was like Ron, what do we need that for? We have the New Testament. But it gives us a lot of edification, a lot of good stories, and I want to throw just one out there. If you're just needing to be entertained for a little while, there's nothing like reading a few Bible stories just for the entertainment value. It's packed with, all kinds of things. You've got action heroes, like Samson and Joshua and David. People that were courageous like Esther. It's got loads of drama. There's drama all through the old Bible. Even a bit of humor here and there. I've found myself more than once laughing about something I just read. A couple of things that stand out. And one, in the book of Job, over the course of two chapters, you read about a dinosaur, a dragon, people pooping their pants. So it's, you can find humor in the Bible as well. But we know that entertainment is not the only reason there, but there's lots of other reasons. Paul tells us when he's writing to Timothy, that it's given for our inspiration and it's profitable for our doctrine, but it's good for all sorts of things. When I study the Bible, when I'm studying, I'm doing more than just making a cursory glance at things. If I'm going deep, I like to look into, see what I can look into and find of the by looking at the original languages that the Bible was written in. We know that the Old Testament was written largely in Hebrew. There's a couple other languages here and there, small pieces of it, but largely Hebrew. The New Testament was written in Greek. And these languages are very different from the one we speak. And there's often differences in how things are said. And, translation isn't an exact perfect science. So we kind of sometimes lose some of the detail. I don't believe we lose anything that we need, in translation. In the King James English, we have everything that we need. But often there's stuff that's not quite, clear. I'm very interested in why people do things. When someone does something, I'm curious as to why. And that's not always available in the Old Testament stories. Sometimes it is, but a lot of times it isn't. Now I'm interested in motivations, and I come to find out that that information is actually there in the original language sometimes, because like Hebrew can have one word that conveys a whole, sentence full of meaning in English, And when you cut that down to one word in English, you lose a little bit of the detail. But I encourage folks when I'm telling the young folks about studying, I encourage them to look at the original languages, and that's really pretty easy for us to do. I mean, you don't have to actually go and learn Hebrew or learn Greek. I would probably be dead before I could learn all that stuff or learn Hebrew well enough to actually read it. You'll see, I'm going to try to pronounce some Hebrew words here in a little bit, and you'll see just how terrible I am at reading it. I thought I'd start off by giving some examples from Joseph's story of how we can look at Hebrew. Well, yeah, as I was saying, that we have all these tools available to us today, commentaries and dictionaries and concordances and all sorts of things that make looking at the original languages relatively easy for, you know, anybody. As I said, I don't really know much about reading either one of the languages, but there's a lot of folks that are much smarter than I am that can read it and have given their thoughts on some of that. So yeah, the story of Joseph, it's a long one, and it covers a lot. And but it starts off, the Bible first introduces us to him. He was a teenager. I think about 17, I think it's, if I remember right, I don't have that, I should have that. But anyway, the first or second verse about him tells us that he was a teenager. And, you know, as we know, his brothers didn't really like him much. You know, his father, thought he was the favorite. His father treated him much more, you know, lavishly than the rest of them. In one of the Bible stories that I remember growing up, the name of the story was Joseph's Coat of Many Colors. Of course, as a child, that's what I latched onto about Joseph, was the coat of many colors. When I actually read it in King James the first time as a teenager, I was kind of disappointed because the coat of many colors was just a little footnote at the beginning that wasn't really that big in the story. That was an expensive garment for that time. A show of wealth and whatnot, and by Jacob giving this to Joseph, it was showing a great deal of favoritism. So that to the start didn't endure Joseph very well to his brothers. And then Joseph started having these dreams, that gave him the impression that he might be somebody important someday. Now we'll talk a little more about the dreams later, but it's obvious that these dreams were, several folks in the story have dreams, and it's obvious that the dreams had a quality to them that made the people think that there was something to them. It wasn't just your everyday or every night kind of dream. Well, Joseph started having these dreams, and he told his brothers about these dreams. He told his father, and they were like, what, are we going to bow down to you one day? So, Joseph's brothers weren't very fond of him. In Genesis 37:4, this is very near the beginning of the story, it says, "And when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him." This phrase, "could not speak peaceably unto him," to us, that kind of gives the impression that they didn't talk nice to him, they're constantly bickering or whatever. That's kind of what it implies to us in the Hebrew. And again, like I said, this is going to be a very bad try at pronouncing these things. So in Hebrew, the phrase is velo yekala dabro ishala, or leshala, sorry. Meaning they could not speak peace to him. In the East, in the Middle East, all around that area, common way of you know, giving salutation to acquaintances is to say something along the lines of peace to you, or peace, yeah, peace be to you, or peace to you, friend. You're much like our typical exchanges of hi, how are you? You know, good. How are you? You know, it's the same thing in their, you know, in their culture. But unlike us, I mean, we in our culture, we may not need to particularly like a person, but still be able to, we can still say, you know, hi, how are you? You know, we can go through the pleasantries, even if we don't particularly like the person we're talking to, you know. In the Middle East, it's a little bit different. If they say something like peace to you, they feel they kind of mean it, maybe more strongly than the way we think of our own salutations. And if they don't like you, if they don't wish peace to you, they won't say it. They will not. They will feel they can't say that to you because they would be, you know, maybe kind of like just lying. You know, if they told you that they wished you peace, you know, wished you well, is similar to what we would think of. So that's what, you know, his brothers didn't, you know, couldn't bring themselves to wish him well or to wish him peace. And also in this culture, if they feel like they can't wish you peace, they also may not feel quite such a it may not hurt their conscience so much to if they get the opportunity to hurt you in some way. They'll be less inclined to, you know, to be hesitant of taking an opportunity to cause you harm or whatever. And obviously Joseph's brothers, most of them, felt this way because they did take an opportunity and were, and you know, they were prepared to do him great harm. So that was part from the early part of the story that I thought was interesting as far as that. It gives us an idea of maybe why his brothers were capable of thinking about, you know, throwing him in a pit and leaving him to die, or as their first thought was, just, you know, outright killing him when he, you know, came up, when he came to find them when they were out in the field. And later on in the story, after Joseph is taken by his brothers and thrown in the pit and then sold into Egypt as a slave, we find that he was sold to a man named Potiphar, who was, the King James tells us, an officer of Pharaoh. The word officer there, in the original Hebrew word there is seris. You know, translates officer, but it also signifies that this man Potiphar was a eunuch, because the word seris means, you know, eunuch, which is interesting because we know Potiphar had a wife, you know, because, you know, we know that later on his wife tries to entice Joseph to fornication or whatever, or I guess it would be adultery. So how would, you know, why would a eunuch have a wife? Well, in their culture, she was more or less a status thing. It was a decoration, maybe you might say. But to me, what that offers is, you know, possible motive as to why she chose to do what she did later on. Confused, but got stuff printed on both sides. It also tells us this Potiphar was the captain of the guard. The again, the phrase star catabaculum. Catabaculum. Captain of the guard, meaning the word there in Hebrew can mean butcher, cook, prison guard, a number of different things. It's quite likely that the meanings prison guard and butcher were meant in this case, because it's thought that, this Potiphar was captain of the guards, whose basic job was, when the king says, "I want his head," they're the ones that went out and got it. You know, so that was their job. They're also, they guarded the prisoners. They guarded the people that were waiting to have their head removed, and so forth. You know, Noah, when he was writing about this, he said this about Joseph. He says, "Joseph was a goodly person and well-favored." And that's more or less the extent of his description of Joseph as a maybe his physical description as a person and so forth. The Hebrew says, Yepka for Vipha Marath, or Marath, which means beautiful in his person, beautiful in his countenance. We'd find that the King James Bible, or the Old Testament Bible, is not the only place that we can actually read about a lot of these people that are talked about in there. The Quran, for instance, the holy book that the Muslims use, dedicates a whole chapter to talking about Joseph's physical appearance, how pretty he was, or how pretty they thought he was, anyway. And many, there's a number of poets, the word just totally just slipped out of my mind. Anyway, poets from that area of the world were Arabs, that's the word I wanted. Arab poets from back then who waxed very long about the beauty of Joseph and so forth. So apparently they had the idea that he was a very attractive man. And Moses kind of conveys that when he says that he was a beautiful person. I don't know, maybe y'all find that sort of thing interesting. I find it really interesting that folks in the Bible study group and the folks at Antioch know that I like to talk about, words, and I can get sidetracked on that. But what we're here for is we're looking at, what lessons we can find in the Old Testament. Why we look at it? We look at it for, primarily, it's for our edification, for our learning. So in that spirit, I'm going to look at 8 lessons that we can take from the story of Joseph. Eight lessons that we can take, as Christians, and just as, decent people. First of all, as I said, Joseph, his story begins more or less talking about the dreams he had. As I said, that these dreams, several people in the story of Joseph have dreams. And, we all know that, dreams are often quite vague to us. If you're a typical person, then within 5 minutes or so of waking up, you've forgotten most of the details that you were just dreaming. I find within just a few minutes of waking that I can remember the gist of what I was dreaming, but the details are just, lost in the fog. This apparently wasn't the case in these cases with the dreams. And apparently the dreams had a quality to them, like I said, and I I won't begin to try to guess at what that quality might have been. But apparently it had some quality that told the people that had the dream that this is something they, this was something different. This wasn't a typical dream. This was not, just, the random firings of their neurons, as some of the experts say our dreams are. But that they had some sort of meaning, and they remembered them in detail. And they said Joseph was young when he started having his dreams. And we don't know how exactly he took them, if he knew completely what his purpose in life was going to be. I don't think he knew where he would end up. I don't think he knew that, that he would end up second in command of Egypt, practically. Pretty sure he didn't know that. But he had an idea of what was to come, and he believed, from that God had a purpose for him. And that's kind of important going forward with the story. Also, Joseph, I don't know when he discovered this, but he realized that he had the ability to interpret dreams. And he knew that this, this ability, was not, this ability came from God. He was not the one to credit with this, and he never credited himself with this, with the interpretation. But these dreams, his story begins with a dream. He knew way, he knew deep in his heart that God had a purpose for him. We have dreams, but not in the same sense. We at times think we know what we want to be when we grow up, for instance, or once we grow up we think of what we might, want to do when we get older, or, decide what our purpose is. We don't really believe that God has a, has our life planned out, as some folks do. But we never know when, God might be prepping us in some way to do something later on. but if we feel God has a purpose for us, it's maybe not a bad idea to keep that close to us and work towards preparing yourself for it a little bit. Another thing we can take from this story is, trust God. Trust God in all circumstances. Joseph trusted God. Joseph suffered a lot of hardship. And I'm sure that, at many points, Joseph felt really down. I mean, he literally found himself in the pit one time. His brothers thrown him in the pit and he couldn't get out. Maybe couldn't even see the top, the rim real well. And when we find ourselves in a pit, when we find ourselves down, situations where we just can't think we can see the light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak. Tendency with a lot of folks is to ask why has God let this happen to me? And we may want to say, what good is God if he can't keep this from happening to me? All these people the people in the stories that we read about, we find that they were human and they had human flaws. And I found looking at the stories that one of those flaws that was more common than others to me seems to be lack of humility starting out. Joseph had a lack of humility. He would wear his fancy coat out into the fields, kind of to help his brothers with the flocks or whatever. The equivalent, for us, we'd be wearing maybe a tuxedo, to sweep and mop the floor. So he was apparently, fond of flaunting his position or flaunting the fact that his daddy liked him more than the rest of them. And another one of the first things that the Bible tells us about Joseph is that he was a tattletale. He would go out in the fields with his brothers, and then he'd run home and tell Dad all the naughty things they were doing. And I'm sure that had a lot to do with not endearing him very well to his brothers. So Joseph wasn't a very humble man to begin with. And we find that with a lot of the men that we read about in the Bible. But God kind of needs them to be humble to do the work that He has for them. And as we see in many of the stories, God makes sure there are enough situations that they get humble pretty quick, or that they're humble by the time that He needs them to do the work that He has for them. So I kind of look at a lot of this early stuff that happened to Joseph, as prepared him to humble him, and I think to also show him that he would have the strength that he needed to carry out the things that would eventually he would learn that he was intended to do. But in all the hardship that Joseph went through, he always trusted God. Another lesson from Joseph's story: have integrity. Joseph had integrity. Joseph's behavior and life gives us a powerful testimony of integrity. We know that at one point he was made head of the household of Potiphar, the prison guard. And the story tells us that Potiphar saw that everything that Joseph did was blessed, and basically put his whole household, everything in Joseph's hands, trusted him completely. The Bible says something to the effect of what Joseph says is, he has so much trust in me, he doesn't even know what it is all I do around here. He just knows that, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do it, so that it profits him. So when Potiphar's wife comes and tries to entice Joseph to go off and have adultery with her, he says, how could I do that to how could I do that to my master who trusts me so much, and how could I sin against God? He says, this is inconceivable for me to do. He had integrity. Now, temptation will come to us. We're all human. We're all subject to any manner of temptation. In my own life, there's been many times that I've been tempted to do all sorts of things that I know I shouldn't. And I'd like to say that I always resisted that temptation, but I can't do that. But we can have, we can have I keep losing the words that I want. Anyway, God says He won't allow a temptation to come on us that we can't handle. He says, there's no temptation taking you that, is not uncommon. And he tells us that Jesus understands all those temptations himself. He was human for a while. He knows what it is to be human and to be tempted. And so we have we have a mechanism to give us hope and trust that, you know, to have that integrity that we need to have. Another life lesson, you know, that we should be God dependent. Joseph, as I said, always knew that his dream, his ability to interpret dreams came from God. You know, it wasn't something deep within himself. He didn't think of it as you know, a special power that he had. He felt it was God. He never took credit, never gave focus to himself as this great guru of dreams. He always gave credit to God. You know, God was the one that revealed it to him. The story of Joseph can teach us to manage success. You know, when God honors us with, you know, with some task or gives us success, you know, in life, gives us prosperity, we mustn't forget to first honor Him and honor others. Rather than honoring ourselves, you know, rather than saying, you know, look what I have done for myself. one of the things that I'm constantly mindful of is not being a boastful person. I guess it's one of the things that I've feared about myself, you know, feared that I would have a problem with, maybe most of any other temptation. I occasionally, you know, find myself entertaining thoughts of maybe I'm better than this person, you know, or I can tell I'm smarter than this person. that's my weakness right there. Listen to someone talk and think, how do you tie your shoes? So humility is one thing I'm very concerned with on my own part. And I'm very hesitant to tell people about my abilities, what I am capable of. Obviously, I'm not a good preacher. But what I can do is stand up here in front of you without my knees knocking together and wanting to run out that door, you know, and I can talk to you. I may forget my train of thought every now and then, but I can still do it. You know. But I'm careful that I'm not boastful about that ability or any of the other things. Like I said, our Bible study group, I'm usually the one that has to explain what we study. And also, the young'uns, they tend to come to me when they're having problems, and I give them counsel. And some of the older ones do come to me as well for counsel. And apparently, I'm kind of gifted in that way. I've always been very good at listening. And later in life, I learned that, you know, not just can I listen, but I've actually learned enough that I might can offer some stuff in return, you know. But I realize, you know, I don't just have that knowledge because, you know, I'm smart, but because I've experienced it, because I've been through the temptations, you know. I've failed many times, you know. And I have all these things to draw on as examples. I use my life a lot as an example, especially the young'uns, mostly of what not to do. But you know, I grew up, you know, in the church like many of you, and all the knowledge that I have of, you know, the Bible and of life know, I know that God is to credit for that more than me. You know, God sent the message to us in the forms that we would have to learn and give us the Bible. You know, He made sure we had that. He made sure we had the ability to study it and understand it. But we need to manage our success and manage our gifts, you know. Remember where they came from. And as I've mentioned several times, the next lesson, of course, humility. Joseph's story shows us a good example of humility. And like I said, humility is a problem I've felt that I've had in my life. And I witnessed some others that seem to have problems with humility as well. God, as I said, Joseph, from his dreams, had the idea that one day God was going to lift him up, you know, above his brother and above his his family and above. I don't, like I said, don't know how much he knew from the dreams, how much he knew of his what was going to happen. But he didn't get puffed up by this knowledge so much that, you know, he went around telling folks, you know, I'm going to be a really, you know, big person someday. He always seemed to show humility later in his life anyway, after having a few, getting a few life lessons of his own about humility. And as I said, pride has been a stumbling block for me, and I know pride can be a major stumbling block for other people. I've had people tell me about their own experiences with pride. Another life lesson from Job: fully forgive. Forgiveness. It's hard to forgive somebody that's hurt you. It's really hard. Especially if it's been a situation where you had almost complete trust in someone and that they've just totally wrecked that trust. I mean, if somebody bumps into you in the grocery store, it's pretty easy to, you know, oh, no problem, you know. My fault, I shouldn't have been standing here. And man's wisdom tells us, you know, forgive, but don't forget. Now, there's some wisdom in that. I mean, you know, if someone has broken trust with you and you know, and, you know, hurt you badly in your life, it would not be real smart for you to allow them to do it again to that extent. You know. But the Bible does teach us to forgive. You know, like I said, man's wisdom is to forgive, but don't forget. The Bible tells us, you know, to forgive and to forgive often. And to not hold that trespass against the person that you've forgiven. You know, Jesus was asked, how many times should we, you know, forgive our brother? And he said 70 times 70, which is, you know, his way of saying every time. Joseph had a lot of reasons to be bitter with his brothers. He had good reason to hold a grudge against what they did to him. Now, you know, at his later time in life, he realized that, you know, that God was directing his life, that God was the reason why he ended up where he was, and you know, you know, it wasn't totally maybe his brother's fault that they didn't like him. I'm sure that as he got older and got more wise himself, he realized that, you know, maybe I wasn't a real good, you know, real good brother back then. I was kind of a brat. I'm sure he realized that. It's obvious in the story that he was a wise individual, not just able to interpret dreams, but it says, you know, everything, God blessed everything that he touched. When God works through us, he doesn't just miraculously make the things happen around us. You know, we're the ones that actually do the work. You know, so we have to have the knowledge and the wisdom to carry out the work that God has. He's not just going to give that to us. He's not just going to use us as a conduit, so to speak, for his power. So Joseph would have realized that maybe he could have been a slightly more humble person when he was younger. But anyway, he had reason to be bitter with his brothers. But we know in the story that ending part, to me, it's always kind of an emotional part of the story for me, you know, reading about the way he went about revealing himself to his brothers. And forgiving them. In the end, he forgave them completely. And I'm going to mention more on that in a little bit, but the last of the eight different life lessons that we can take from the book of, or the story of Joseph, to pursue true prosperity. And true prosperity is not things like gaining material wealth, or becoming a big shot in the world, becoming a very important person that everybody knows your name, and you'll be remembered long after you're dead. I tell folks I'm quite happy with the knowledge that 20 years after I'm dead, only a few people will remember my name. I am perfectly okay with that. I don't want to be a big famous person. But true prosperity, it involves glorifying God through the way we live our life. The Bible tells us that we are an example to the world. We are the face of Christianity to the world. And we need to epitomize that in our lives. We need to exhibit the qualities that a Christian should have as an advertisement, so to say. For this is why you need to be a Christian. You get to be a nice person like me. Joseph, he continued to cultivate and pursue a relationship with God throughout his life. And he attained true prosperity not in becoming, the second in command of Egypt, this great ruler, this great organizer of making sure that the famine didn't, wipe out the population. He didn't achieve prosperity by becoming a great interpreter of dreams. He prospered by cultivating a relationship with God. And I think that's the ultimate example from the story of Joseph that we can take is always give God the credit. Always work on strengthening your relationship with God. So that's eight life lessons in general that we can take from Joseph. I want to take a minute to give some of my thoughts to some of the young people, to the teenagers, or the young adults, or whatever. What they can take away from the story of Joseph in his early years. As we said, when he was first introduced to us, he was a teenager. We can take some life lessons, or the young folks can take some life lessons from him as well. How we treat others matters. How we treat others is going to, you know, incur or going to affect how they treat us. As you said, Joseph started off as a kind of a bratty person. He was a tattletale, and he liked to show off his status. He wore his tuxedo while he, you know, tended the sheep. And he did this. He paraded this in front of his brothers, and I don't know that when he told his brothers of the dreams, I don't know if he delighted in telling them that they were going to bow down to him one day. But I'm sure that's kind of the way they heard it, you know, because they already had this negative view of him anyway. But of course, we know that this doesn't, you know, just because he flaunted his position and tattled and all this stuff, it doesn't justify the behavior of his brothers. You know, if someone does something mean or does something nasty or just, you know, something rude or whatever, doesn't give us license to do it to them. That would not be setting a good example. And it would likely make your life a little bit more difficult in the process, because that sort of thing just goes around. Someone does something bad to you, you do something bad to them, they'll do something bad to you again, and it just keeps going. Yeah. It gets you nowhere. An apology can get you quite a long ways, I've learned. And I've learned that the hard way. It can get you a lot farther than, you know, something like an I told you so, for instance. You know, young folks, your parents, they're people too. You know, they're people just like you. They were just like you at one time. You know, young folks know that's something I'm very fond of saying. Is, I was just like you back then. But yeah, your parents, you know, they're people. They're going to make mistakes. Joseph's father was, you know, mistaken in treating him more, you know, treating him better than the others, treating him, you know, with the favoritism that he did. You know, and that mistake, well, I mean, frankly, it nearly got Joseph killed. You know, and that mistake set the stage for his brothers to get, you know, to where they hated him so much that, you know, they were willing to just murder him out of hand and say, well, you know, some animal must have got him. You know, remember, your parents, you know, are going to make mistakes, but forgive them. You know, as I said, many of the people we read about in the Bible starting off have problems with humility. You know, and God would put them in situations where they would learn humility. As a young person, to be young and to be strong and to feel 10 feet tall and bulletproof, as they say, invincible, it's easy to think of yourself as much higher than you probably should. Remember that the Bible teaches us that humility is a very important thing for a Christian, and showing that to the world is rather important, I think. I said I was going to talk also more about Joseph's forgiveness. I basically already said most of it. Anyway, Joseph, when he revealed his identity to his brothers at the very, very end of the story, more or less the very end of the story, and of course they realized, you know, who he was, and they were, of course, at that point kind of afraid too, you know, and he really is over all of us, and I'm sure that for a few moments there, anyway, their lives flashed before their eyes. But Joseph was very quick to forgive them. And he told them there in Genesis 45:5, he says, "Now therefore be not grieved nor angry with yourselves that ye sold me hither, for God did send me before you to preserve life." He's like, you thought you were doing me a disservice, but don't worry about it. You know, God had a reason for it. I mean, I don't think he was excusing their behavior. You know, this was not saying that, you didn't know any better. You didn't know any better. You were just, doing your own thing. But he forgave them. And that's a very important lesson for us. You know, as I said, don't know how much Joseph knew throughout his life of what God had in store for him, but he did know that, his adversity was part of a bigger picture. When you forgive somebody, you need to let go of all the bitterness and the anger. Because those kind of things, if you keep those things with you, bitterness and anger, it just breeds more and breeds more. And prevents you from growing as a person. And as a Christian, we need to grow daily. We need to grow more humble, grow more knowledgeable, grow closer to God. And if we have resentments towards people in our life, and these are stumbling blocks that get in the way of that growth. By seeking to develop character traits of a Christian, we're going to face trials in our life. We may not face trials near as bad as what Joseph faced. Although when we are personally the ones experiencing the trials, they do seem pretty great sometimes, and we might get the impression that, we might be taking on a little bit more hardship than some other person. There's been a few times in my ignorance that I've thought that, things are so bad for me, I don't see this being something that happens to most people. This has got to be pretty rough, unique to me. Of course, growing older and hopefully wiser, we realize that nope, this sort of thing happens to everybody, and the sort of things that happen to us can happen to anyone at most any stage in life. But in any adverse situation, if you, this is something I tell the young folks all the time, they probably get tired of hearing it. If you can find one thing in an adverse situation or in a bad situation or a mistake you've made, if you can find one thing that you can learn from it and apply to your life going forward, then it wasn't totally a bad thing. I've made some pretty bad mistakes in my life. And There's been a few things that I've regretted doing. More so the things that I've done that affected other people and not just myself. Those are the things that I have a tendency to regret the most. But I try to value every life experience for what I can learn from it. In the cases of the mistakes I've made, I learn one thing that doesn't work or one thing that I probably shouldn't do again. I can take a life lesson from each of the hardships that I've gone through. And I encourage folks to look at things that way. Don't trivialize, the things that happen to you, the mistakes you make. But look for the value in them. If we find the value in our hardships, it'll help us grow in the way that we need to grow. And those are pretty much my thoughts on the story of Joseph. I know I was a bit scattered here and there, but I hope that you can take something away from what I've said. I mean, if you remember one thing, then I've done my job well enough. As I said, I'm not a great speaker, but I can do it. I really enjoy these conferences, and I really get a lot of edification from them. So I hope you do too. Anyway, I'm done.